devote most of the session to questions and answers. Start from one, from basic point of Yom Kippur. The major pasuk on Yom Kippur, the pasuk which we also place at the stage in Shmona Esrei, if you remember, also on Slichot, also in the main sugyot. Ki b'yom hazeh yichaper aleichem atahir etchem mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem titar. Pasuk is very tricky in terms of its punctuation and or syntax. Ki b'yom hazeh yichaper aleichem atahir etchem mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem titaru. One possible reading, and this is one reading of the Gemara, Ki b'yom hazeh yichaper aleichem atahir etchem mikol chatotechem, comma. In other words, the day of Tara for Chavrot, Fnei Hashem Titaru. That's a separate, independent phrase. Another reading is, Ki b'yom hazeh yichaper aleichem atahir etchem mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem. Averot shebin adam lechaveiro, Yom HaKippurim, excuse me, bin adam lechaveiro, Yom HaKippurim, mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem. Chatotechem lifnei basar v'adam, you have to reconcile the person himself. It's not enough lifnei Hashem. The other very interesting point about the pasuk is how do you read lifnei Hashem? Lifnei Hashem titaru, is that a command? Is it an imperative? Lifnei Hashem titaru, or is it a description? Right? If you remember the mission in the Yoma, Hashrechem Yisrael mimitar etchem. Lifnei atem itarim mimitar etchem. Avichem shel hashamayim. Based upon the pasuk, lifnei Hashem titaru, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is mitari. We'll talk about that in a moment. Rabbi Yonah and Shari Tshuva learns from this. There's a special mitzvah, in his opinion, to do tshuva in approach to Yom Kippur. There's a mitzvah to do tshuva the whole year round. There's an independent mitzvah to do tshuva in anticipation of Yom Kippur. Lifnei Hashem titaru with an exclamation mark. In his opinion, it's an imperative that you have to do tshuva before Yom Kippur. Additionally, so essentially you have in the pasuk, on the one hand, you have this ambiguity whether Nichaper lechem v'taher etchem mikol chatotechem kama lifnei Hashem titaru. Like Rabbi Akiva. In other words, lifnei Hashem describes who's the metaher. You have kibar zeh chaper lechem v'taher etchem, and that's what happens, lifnei Hashem titaru. Or you have lifnei chaper lechem v'taher etchem mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem becomes a modifier of chatotechem, and it means those chateim which are lifnei Hashem. Then you have the question here of, is titaru a description, or titaru an imperative? Then you have also the most interesting thing, ki b'yom hazeh yichaper aleichem litaher etchem. And here's a more basic point, which I'll just mention briefly, and talk about it more in detail. The phrase used here is titaru. Ki b'yom hazeh yichaper aleichem lifnei Hashem litaher etchem. You have a kapara, you have here tahara. The Rav in Halacha Tshuva describes two forms of tshuva. We describe, you know, broadly speaking, kapara means to atone, right, to forgive. With taher means to purify. And Rashi and Vayishlach says that lichaper means to wipe off. That's kaparaz, kaviyachal, you wipe off the sins. You're saying, you have a smudge, you wipe it off, so too the sins. And sins in Tanakh are often compared to stains. And David HaMelech says, Herev kapseini me'avoni, mechatati tatareini. I wipe away the stain of my sin. So you have here lichaper. The way Rashi there explains lichaper means to remove, to wipe off. It's superficial. Litaher, the way the Rav has it, litaher means in transformation. He talks about two kinds of tshuva. One charge is more superficial, more on the surface. Person is afraid. He's he begs forgiveness, but he doesn't really undergo transformation, as opposed to the Taher, in which a person really is changed from within, he undergoes a transformation. That's an important point, and I recommend reading the chapter in Al-Tshuva if you haven't. I'd like to emphasize the following. The Taher describes something else. Tahara means a return to nature. Tahara always means you return to, what does it mean to be pure? You return to nature. And of course, the act of Tahara is always a return to a natural state. For instance, you go to a mikveh. So what's a mikveh? So of course, the original mikveh, in other words, the archetypal mikveh is not even a mikveh. It's really a ma'ayan. It's a well, with a spring, really, in the ground, which the water is bursting forth from nature. Of course, the mikveh is an attempt to emulate a natural body of water. It's rainwater, which has not been collected by human enterprise. In other words, if it's just yadadim, it's possible. Shuvim are possible. You can't draw the water. You have to have it be collected on its own. And, of course, it has to be rainwater, which is natural. Additionally, if a mikveh is located inside a kli, it's possible. Because a kli is an artifact, the mikveh has to be connected to the ground. And, of course, you then enter the mikveh by removing your clothing, which is an artifact, a human artifact. The animals in natural state are not clothed. So you basically, you return to nature. By returning to nature, you, so to speak, purify yourself. Unlike Kedusha. Kedusha is the reverse. Kedusha means to withdraw from nature. Kedusha means to erect barriers, right? To mechitzot. Kedusha, kohanim require bigdei kohuna. Everything Kedusha always means, always goes hand in hand with an artificial withdrawal from nature, barriers, structures, vessels, utensils, clothing. Tahara is always the reverse. Tahara is always the natural state of affairs in which you go back to return to nature, to the original point, before you're contaminated, before you defiled, etc. Now, normally, how do you achieve kapara? You normally achieve kapara by korban. The world of kapara is intimately connected to kedushot and to mechitzot. Right? You pluck the blood of the animal, you throw it on the mizbeach. If it's not a chatat, you actually collect it in a vessel. If it's a chatat, you collect it in a vessel, you mekadesh it with a kli sharet. You can sprinkle with your finger, actually, in the chatat, but the kedusha is through a kli, near kli sharet. You have to shech the animal with a kli, with a sakin. And, of course, Beis HaMikdash is a structure in which the kedusha is contingent upon the mechitzot. Without the mechitzot, there's no kedusha at all. And that's no kapara. Kapara always means you approach Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, what's the point? The point is you withdraw from nature. In your natural state, nature isn't the Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem, Kedusha is Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem means, now how do you approach Kadosh Baruch Hu? Not as part of the natural world. It's me in the sense has a natural life and has a human life. The natural life is common to all living things, to all living organisms. Your biology essentially is similar to that of other living organisms for sure, and certainly of mammals and the animals. Many of our bodily functions are very similar to those of the animal world. So man, on the one hand, exists in a natural state. On the other hand, he exists when human, that he withdraws from nature. Unlike animals, we remain in a natural state. So an animal can hide in a cave. An animal can go under a tree. A human being erects a structure. He creates tools. He wears clothing. He creates an organized society, which is artificial in its organization. There are rules, there are regulations, there's a legal system, and so on and so forth. There's yichus. It's a whole world which is human. Now, Lifnei Hashem normally goes by stepping outside of nature, by presenting yourself as human and not natural. And as such, you approach Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ein bidem aleihem, ein kuratam aleihem. And so on and so forth. By, and that's a normal track to Kedusha and to Kapara. Yom Kippur, once a year, and this is a lot to do with Shem Ishtalech, but I won't get involved in that at the moment. In Yom Kippur, you achieve Kedusha, excuse me, you achieve Kapara. It's called Yom Kippurim. Right? In Chazal, it's not called Yom Kippur, it's called Yom Kippurim, meaning it's a plural. There are many kinds of Kapara. There's no one kind of Kapara, there are many kinds of Kapara. One of them is through Kedusha, the other is through Tara. It means in Yom Kippur you go back to the original state, you try to return to your original natural state and achieve kapara through that. Why? The basic message is as follows. The whole year round, we try to remove man from nature, to remove him from the natural world. The basic message though is, deep down, man is basically positive. Despite Yetzirah, Yetzirah Adam, Rami Urav, and despite the Chet of Adam Arishon, deep down, man is essentially a positive figure. If you go to your original, if you return to your original self, your basic nature, if you go back to the original state which you began from, so you're positive. And therefore, you can do tshuva and kapara, not only by stepping outside nature, but deep down, there's a harmony with nature. So it may have been violated or upset during the Cheder of the Marishon. It may always have been not the basic plan, but deep down, man is a positive figure in his natural state as well. And, deep down, man is basically positive. And Yom Kippur, once a year, we try to go back, or I'll state it differently, once a year in Yom Kippur, we try to undo the effects of the original sin. We try to go back to the original state, and in such, now you have a double kapara. You have one, so for Kedusha, one is Tahara. How does this play itself out? So you have two Seirim. You have the Seir Hapnimi, in other words, the one in the Mikdash, which is the idea of kapara. You take it, you go inside the first barrier, the second, the third, you enter Kodesh HaKodeshim, in other words, the place which is most removed and most demarcated from set aside. You throw the dam in the parochet, which of course is another kli, excuse me, the kaparet, which is a kli, and then the parochet. And that's number one. And number two is the Seir Mishtaleach. Seir Mishtaleach, and that's the paradox of Seir Mishtaleach. Seir Mishtaleach is kapara through tahara. But what you do is you send him back to primeval nature, you send him into the desert, not in the desert, but you send him to a place, you send him to, phrase in the Gemara, this phrase in the Pasuk is, Azazel, Az Shebeharim. No, it's a place which is not only barren, it's savage almost, and the idea is to try to get the most primeval, original state of creation. Not to find some kind of pasture or some meadow, but rather to find a jagged cliff which you feel the original point of creation almost staring at you. As Shebeharim, and you push the seir over the cliff, it's the idea of returning to nature. As a matter of fact, Dichyato Latzug, Zoi Shechitato. That's a manyoma. Dalpidin, pushing him over is like Shechita. But of course, it's not Shechita with an artifact, with a knife or the tool. It's Shechita in a natural state. You just shove him over the cliff and there he goes. He's and the reason is because there's this dual element in Yom Kippur throughout. Now, there are many halachot which I won't go into now because they're complicated and we'll have some time for questions and answers. There are many expressions that have vodah which express the idea of tahara. Just an example. Bidei Lavan is supposed to be Bidei Zahav. Bidei Lavan, the idea is more purity, it's a more natural beged. There are a few other halachot, which all point to the fact that Siddha Voda, the Kodol has to go that because we talk in the mikveh all the time, right? It's the only place, it's the only time for the whole year that the Kohen Gadol has to actually go to the mikveh. Of course, if his tummy goes to the mikveh for out of common sense, but it's part of the avodah. There's never a mikveh harbais. You have kiddusha daim v'aglaim, because kiddusha daim v'aglaim is a form of kiddusha. You need klisharis for that. But Yom Kippur, you have to go to the mikveh. Chamesh tvilot, v'sa kiddushim. This constant double motif of tvilah v'kiddush. And so the basic point is that Yom Kippur says that every person has I'll try to translate it into more practical terms. Every person, it's not only positive if you apply yourself to improve, to self-improvement. If you listen to if you work on your midos, if you improve yourself, etc., etc. So you become a positive. You become a positive human being if you take to heart the messages of Tanakh, of ethics, etc. But you can be a positive, ethical human being, you're a shamayim oved Hashem, by self improvement, by avoda, step after step, stage after stage. And that's crucial, and that's the path the whole year round. But there's also an element within each and every person, lurking maybe beneath the surface, is an element in which each and every person is not only a good person in the Yirei Shamayim and Oved Hashem because he spent years working upon himself and he spent and he battles the Yetzirah, etc. Deep down, intuitively, your basic nature is positive. Intuitively, people are good and their basic nature is. And part of being a good person is not only by trying to mold yourself artificially, but also by reconnecting to the positive elements which are within your personality. Be able to reconnect to them, to the basic human decency, to your intuitive good nature, to the heart which is within each person, which is tahor. So then you have, you also have avodat Hashem, what lev tahor b'ralei Elokim. But it's not b'ralei Elokim, it's lev tahor b'ralei Elokim, meaning the lev tahor is there. It's the question of being able to remove the layers that accumulate upon it, to remove various inclinations of laziness, of desire, of apathy and whatever, and to go back to the original self, which is one of tahara, then you have b'fnei Hashem titahara. Okay, up to this is the word.
In Hinnin, anyway, Chazal says this phrase that you hear that song from Hashem. Kol malachim shehem poalei tefilot yaviu tefilati lefnei chisek v'vedecha v'yapitzo to lefanecha. I want to know how we understand that phrase, especially in light of the fact that I was told by a couple of Rambam in the Shishiva that we don't say machnisei rachamim.
The Gra had a policy which he was opposed consistently to any mention of malachim and tefillah, particularly to any appeal to malachim. Now, I assume that I include this as well. In other words, machnisei rachamim is a good example. It's very hard not to say machnisei rachamim. The Gra was certainly opposed to saying Barchuni Friday night in Shom Aleichem, because they're actually requesting a bracha from the Malachim, and the Gra was adamantly opposed to. It doesn't begin with him; he threw his whole prestige behind it. The story goes much earlier, but the Gra basically threw his whole weight behind and against Barchuni, against any foreign, basically any foreign entity in Tefillah except Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, and of course, the Gemara says that we say Kaddish b'Lashon Arami that the Malachim shouldn't understand. So Barchuni, Machnisei Rachamim. Barchuni, of course, is worse because Barchuni actually wanted them to bless you. And the idea of the intermediary is A, it's a mechitzah between you and the Kaddish Baruch Hu. B, it's theologically problematic. The whole idea is that it's a direct connection to Kaddish Baruch Hu, and we deserve worse than the idea of an intermediary. You know, we work in the idea that there's a direct connection. You kadama mesiach bozen chaveiro, and therefore machis rachamim is a little better. You're just asking them to be the vehicle to. That's by the same issue. And I assume the Gra, if he was a shliach tzibur, probably skip that those lines as well. If you know some of the changes in some of the piyutim, also you meet us, the same idea, right? The original period says, midan echona, you know, midan echona, bakshir, bakshir, rachamim, oh, bakshir alameich, or whatever. So we don't want to appeal even to his attributes. They're also seen as being not Kadosh Baruch himself. So it all begins, avakesh rachamim, it's midat rachamim, you know, tigalgali, it's midat rachamim, aleinu tigulgal, etc. It's about the same sensitivity. Things like this, that in opposition to this, this is a basic human desire for, in other words, popular nature wants to have malachim. In other words, malachim appeal to popular imagination. It appeals to popular imagination that the malachim can help you out, and everyone feels better when they know they have protection in, you know, in some office or whatever. If you know you have protection inside the pnim, or the secretary like here in the office likes you, so you always feel your chances are better. So we feel the same thing upstairs also. That's probably what bothered them. This whole idea of fighting, you know, the Rambam put a huge amount of energy into fighting with all kinds of superstitions. And the topic of Malachim was center stage there. If you read the Rambam's introduction to Perek Chelek, if you read the Rambam's introduction, the Rambam's in the Morning Vuchim, beginning of second Chelek, the Rambam consistently tried to arrive where he considered more refined, a more refined perspective theologically, to arrive at what he considered a better, a less vulgar belief. But the fact that he's constantly fighting this means it's deep. It's a deeply rooted human imagination. For same reason, it's people, both the idea, you know, the picture, if you want, almost the picture appeals to us, and the idea appeals to us. So I think, you know, you always have people trying to refine these beliefs and to make them abstract, and people trying, you know, in the popular belief, there's a constant tug of war there, and it is.
Doesn't the fact that these either piyutim or tefillos existed for centuries before the Gra, with no opposition, indicate that the gedolim of those centuries didn't have this problem?
Okay, the question was whether these piyutim exist before the Gra, whether that doesn't prove that others agree. So the truth is the opposition began before also. It's documented well before also. I think he threw his prestige behind it, but the opposition was documented before. And to a certain degree, the Rambam also, before the Rambam in his own way, was also opposed in different context. But you're right. In other words, those who wrote them certainly, you know, accepted this. And there are many who said them and still say them today. So yes, it's two, as I said before, it's two, it's a machlok, two different traditions, two different approaches to life, to religion, and indeed so. It remains two different approaches.
In what day? In what sense? Should we stop
there tonight? Well, the Rambam describes, of course, a study that they spent a third on Gemara Tanakh, a third on Mishnah, a third on Gemara, until you know Tanakh and Mishnah down pat, and you master Tanakh and Mishnah. So I assume that most of us still have a long way to go until we. To arrive at that stage also. Who does a periodical, things like this, that first of all, you have to take into account also the Rambam himself, not over there, but also the Torah, he essentially prioritizes metaphysics over Gemara as well. So the ultimate goal, if you want, is metaphysics. Then again, it's always important to remember the Rambam wrote all of Mishnah Torah, including Hilchos Sefer Avodah, Sefer Kabbalah, Sefer Torah. In other words, the Rambam went through the entire Shas from A to Z and codified it, meaning he spent a huge chunk of his time on halacha and not only in metaphysics. But presumably, you know, once you've mastered the field, it means Gemara is paramount. I'll tell you why. The reason is because Gemara sees not only as knowledge, he sees Tanakh and Mishnah essentially as knowledge. If you have the knowledge and it's secure, then you're fine. The only thing you have to do is safeguard it. So make a periodic chazara, and the knowledge will remain in place. Gemara, it's not only that you think, Gemara by definition is not a finite discipline. You can be chadesh. Like Tanakh Mishnah, Tanakh has been Tanakh already is closed. Mishnah is also Gemara. You can always expand. Gemara doesn't mean Talmud Bavli. It means
It means chidushim and anything you think in your svar. So Gemara, you can always expand. It's not that you can always expand it. It goes beyond that. It goes to the fact that in Gemara, the activity itself is important. In other words, it's participation in the activities. It's really partnering with Kodesh Baruch Hu in a sense, and the expressing relationship, unlike Mishnah and Tanakh, which I see primarily as very important information, but nevertheless information. So information, once you know, this famous Gemara Nachos about the Dhamma. Kigod ani shemadati kotra kulav. I know everything. I've mastered the ganshas. I know everything. Should I? Can I now study Chochmei Banis? I can't go to college. And the answer is bisman shelo yom v'lalayla. In other words, that he still is required or obligated to study the Gemara. Why? Just this one. What was the premise of the dialogue here? The Dhamma thought that's some information. There's no information. If you know everything, that's it. You can stop. The answer is it's not information. The answer is the activity itself is important. And therefore, you don't stop even if you know. Even if you don't increase your knowledge, the activity itself is important.
So the kind of math analysis now popularized by like Rabbi Dar revealed another that part of the Gemara category of thinking should a deeper understanding of the book.
I tend to think not so. I'm not convinced. I tend to think that Torah Baal Peh by it's only a question of the style of learning. Well, it's like this. I think even then, at the end of the day, or Mandana or Kinnun, I'll say the following. I think it's between Pshutosh and Midrash. The difference being that Midrash, you try to expand, it's a creative act. In Midrash, you're trying to create a new text, a new narrative. Right, for instance, Avraham Avinu appears in the Chumash when he's 75 years old. In Lech Lecha. What happens before? So that's not Shadosh Likra. The Medrash says all the story with Terach, and the Medrash fills in the gaps, right? And or the Medrash will tell you why Torah says Yitzchak is blind. Why is he blind? Torah doesn't tell us what was the accident. The Medrash gives three suggestions. So by doing so, the Medrash really is expanding, creating new Torah. That, I tend to think, is included in Gemara. I'm not 100% convinced, but I tend to think that is indeed included. Take a Gemara and get it, about Pilei Shba Gival, against Sefer Shoftim. So much like this, Eliyahu Navi met, I forget who, in the time maybe, and B'maika Asli Grachmano, what Kesh Baruch Hu learning today? So he's learning the story of Pilei Shba Gival. And because Baruch was saying, "If Yatar b'ni Omer kach, Yonatan b'ni Omer kach," meaning because Baruch Hu is debating the merits of the two opinions, the Medrash about Pilei Shba Gival. The two opinions whether the problem was domestic or sexual, but and the two different narratives, two different readings of the story, and because Baruch Hu there, you know, it's something new. And the human beings have created a new Torah because Rav was interested. So that I think, yes. Now, if you ask about Rav Meidan or Rav Binun, if you ask about what they are doing, does that qualify as Medrash or as Pshat? I guess Rav Meidan, the total answer is. They're even suggesting the area as Medrash. You know, he's convinced that Pshat is Pshutosh Likra. And if it's Pshat, so it has the added benefit. If you want to be truer to the text. However, methodologically, maybe in a sense, paradoxically, by hitching its wagon to the pasuk, so your interpretation has no independent status. It's simply explaining. If I say pshat to the pasuk, what I'm doing is nothing creative. I'm simply explaining to you what's written over there. So I'm basically being subservient to the pasuk. So nothing new has been created. Simply I've explained. So it's maybe a very deep explanation, a very enlightening explanation, but still an explanation. If I do Medrash, the way I understand it at least, Medrash, you create something new. So by making the Pshat closer to the original part, to the original, in a sense, its status is losing something. But so if you view what Rabbi Yehuda is doing as Medrash, years ago, someone in Yeshiva said to him, I think what you do is wonderful, just like consider Medrash not Pshat. And he was not too happy. Now, if you hear Medrash, so then the answer is maybe yes. If you hear Pshat, So I don't think it's, I mean, I think it's very important. Let me be clear. Pshat is crucial. No one wants to know what the pasuk says. It's just, you know, do you ask whether it's completely Rambam's idea of Gemara? I think not. But pshat means crucial. Just understand the pasukim, of course.
What does the Rosh Hashanah think of women acting as servants of Orthodox shuls?
First, I have no problem. I mean, I'll give you a 20 seconds background, but there's no problem, though. It's a PD like this. There's no pasuk, right? What you have is, it says, so it's like a melech, the sifri says melech velo malka. Pshat, in my humble opinion at least, is that means for a melech, for a king. I mean, there are many requirements. And there are many formal requirements for a king which don't exist for normal people and for normal positions. And so there's no way that you can logically expand Melech Velo Malka to other positions. The Rambam did. The Rambam expanded Melech Velo Malka to all positions of authority. I think the Ramban Yevamos is, if you read him closely, I think at least he leaves some hints that he's aware that Melech and other Sarot and not necessarily the same. But, what?
The Rambam
where? The Rambam?
The Rambam
Yevamos Memhei.
Memhei,
yeah. He doesn't say explicitly, I think if you read carefully, he's aware that there's a distinction between a king and other positions of authority. Anyway, the Rambam did say positions of authority. But nevertheless, leaves open the question, what is a Sra? A shul president, with all due respect, I find hard to believe it's you call volunteer work. It's a big pain to be a shul president. It's hard to call it a position of authority there's no coercive element. People debate, what does it mean? Did you have to have the ability to punish people? Capital punishment? Do you need some kind of authority? In other words, Sra means that you're a position of authority to force your will upon someone else. Shul presidents usually, even the president of the United States have trouble forcing their will. Shul presidents certainly don't. If you want to see that there was a Gush Emunim had a woman who headed Gush Emunim for many years. So someone published an article in Tchumim like 25 years ago, in which he gave them a heter. He said, it's a volunteer organization, it's not a national organization. There's a bunch of criteria he used over there. But he was mad there. Right? Because yes, you know, what do you think it's? What do you think it's proper? I personally have no problem with a woman being in a regular organization. But if you feel uncomfortable, that's a Benat Machaveru question. But I think it's a laughing problem.
Based on the first question about Pros and Malachim, so it would seem that it wasn't a problem specifically with Malachim. It's just really a problem with having an intermediary between the person and the Kesh Baruch. So then, how do we understand brachos in general, even among people, or even something like Shana Tova, something like that, which is essentially a brach?
No, that's I'm hoping you have a Shana Tova. In other words, I'm not astounded upon your Shana Tova. I hope you have a Shana Tova. I'm wishing you the Kesh Baruch should give you a Shana Tova, etc. Right? You say the Shana Tova tikatev tichatev, not by me. I can write it. You have to write that. You need from the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But like this, the more difficult question is the point going to a human being to ask him to intercede for you? In other words, you go to go to a tzaddik, go to a rebbe. He's a grandpa Basra, you know, that person has if a person has a choleshes b'toch b'toch, you go find a tzaddik to daven for him. Look, that I think makes certain sense within limits, or within common sense, if you want. I do think that a person is in distress or whatever, it makes sense. That someone you respect and admire for their integrity, for their Yirat Shamayim. I went to Rav Soloveitchik and asked him to be spotless for people, for family members. And I felt that it was, I felt that both of them, I felt, had, if you want, spiritual intensity that I lacked, and that having a spotless. Now, I don't think I'm a little stranger. I think I would go, I understand people went to the Chazon Ish. I don't know if I would do. I think it makes a big difference if the person who is spiraling knows the chole and knows the person. And I certainly am not a big fan of all these wholesale holding lists.
and I have ruined the Mishabech HaChol, and I've ruined the Refrain, but certainly, anything goes. If there's someone who knows you, or who knows the person involved, you're asking, he's not interceding. You're asking him to make a request on his own as well. In other words, I would not go, there was a huge machlokas regarding Rabbi Nachman. Because classic Bratzlav, and I remember as a child, there was a shul in my neighborhood which had a sign, we request all the tefillah to be all the mala through Rav Nachman's tzinor or whatever. Now, that caused a huge pulmus against them. There was a huge amount of opposition in Europe to Bratzlav. This was one of the main reasons. But that's one thing. But when you go to a Rebbe or to a person you respect, it's a good friend, misfalo for me, misfalo for my brother or my child, you're not saying intercede, you're saying make it your request, this was my request. And I think it's perfectly legitimate. I think you have to. In other words, in the middle of the week, if you feel, let's say the following: you have to mispala. This kind of mispala often day. If you feel that some reflect the state of mind or your spiritual state, we are at the moment. In other words, people, I think the reason we can ask ourselves, is that hypocritical to say the first two brachot? Not the special ones. Let's say the first two brachot. Again, Abraham, Mechem, Etim. It takes 10 minutes, and on a Monday it takes 1 minute. So is that hypocritical? The answer is not really, because it has to reflect the state of intensity that you are at the moment. Yom Kippur, presumably, because of whatever, because of Asher Tshuva, because of the whole surroundings, because of the day, because of the awe, whatever the reasons are, Yom Kippur, you're indeed more intense. I can tell you, parent-child relationships, husband-wife relationships, also vary in intensity. You don't have the same intensity the whole year round with your wife, your child, your parent. Some of those relationships vary in intensity. Yom Kippur is a day of tremendous intensity. Yom Kippur, a 10-minute bracha, reflects the intensity. In the middle of the week, a 1-minute bracha reflects the intensity. I mean, I'm using this as some examples. In the middle of the week, so you're 90% less intense. So your bracha is 90%, takes less time. What you have to do is in both times reflect, your philosophy reflection of the spiritual experience you are at. Obviously, ideally, now, a person could, if you want, in theory, he could try to be more intense. And there are moments of intensity. If I ask myself, what are the most intense moments of my life? Some of Yom Kippur, most probably not Yom Kippur. They often had to do with personal biographical circumstances. At times, they had to do stuff. There are moments in life in which you just, for whatever reason, just feel different. But those moments also, you know, I think your tefillah is different. Go to a hospital, to the waiting room outside the operating room. You see the kind of tefillah. Go to the shul of a hospital any given day. And you'll understand what it means, Shechina me'al Rosh Hashanah Cholel. And you'll see there a different kind of tefillah. So that is the point. We have to, obviously, the more we can be intense all year round, the better. There's a famous statement from a saying of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that in Hebrew goes like this: Kol Hashana Tzichot Kmo Elul. Well, Oy Vavoyim Elul Yeh Kmo Kol Hashana. Like the whole year, you should try to be like the intensity of Elul. But Oy Vavoy, if in Elul, you go like the rest of the year. Meaning, you should strive to be as intense as possible. But nevertheless, you have to recognize that human nature, by its very definition, it's only laziness. That's the way we're programmed, that our intensity fluctuates and goes up and down. Otherwise, we would crack. So we have to do is try to misfile with this with the most sincerity. And if you try to dive, I'd say it like this. Try davening, Yom Kippur davening, when you're not in Yom Kippur state of mind, that's hypocritical. And that should not be done. Now, to go to the original question, there's a saying in the Gemara that three things, Maskirim Avonotav Shadan, if I remember the phrase. One of them is Yun Tfilah. Now, this is Machlokes Rashi Tosfos there. One of them says, if I remember, one of them says Yun Tfilah means that you don't daven enough attention, and that your davening is too quick and superficial. The other one says the opposite. That Yun Tfilah, you daven too long. And that by davening too long, and it's not, it's inappropriate because it doesn't correspond to where you are. So Yun Tfilah, davening too long, so if you claim to be such a tzaddik, so because Baruch Hu will then judge you accordingly. You know, if you make the pretension to be a tzaddik, plus the longish one is, right? And you're not such a tzaddik. So therefore, that would just cause Kadosh Baruch Hu to realize there's certain hypocrisy involved. So it's a whole good idea, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, to meet Palel longer or shorter. But even in the middle of the year, though, you know, there's no difference in the obligation to Chazot HaShatz in Yom Kippur versus the whole year round. In the middle of the year also, if you feel that by rushing to get the Chazot HaShatz, it will limit your ability to have kavana, or it will chip away at your intensity. So forego chazon hashatz. Chazon hashatz is important per se, but if the question is to have a better kavana in tzati yachid or tiyach chazon hashatz, I say have a better tefillah. If that's the case, it's not clear. There's an obligation to chazon hashatz, and you should hear it if you're finished anyways. But don't rush yourself just because of that.
We don't hear.
Look, first of all, I saw Merabeim do it. I saw the Rosh Techos of the Shatz. So, in a sense, you know, okay, so I can tell you, Master Rav, you know, the Rebbe's the Techos of the Shatz, even though he would stand with regular Sharav, which is somewhat of a contradiction almost. It was the one that he held in the Rambam. And the Chazal Shatz, the Tzibur has to pay attention to the Chazal Shatz, and therefore, and also, the Tzibur also has to be as if in Shalas, you know, you have to stand, called Tzibur, be with Talalim, or Bakshivim, or the Shat Tzibur, whatever. On the other hand, he would learn. He comes back to the question, what's the Chazal Shatz? Because Machlokes in the Gemara, I'm already talking here after conceptualizing it, whether the Chazal Shatz is part of the Tefillah, or it's simply a favor for those who know it's for the shots can certainly help people who don't know how to daven, which of course once upon a time was a widespread phenomenon. So these chazer shots certainly can, a person doesn't have a siddur, he can't, he doesn't have the nusach, so then lotzid bishino baki, that's certainly chazer shots does. Now nowadays that's almost it's almost irrelevant because everybody's sidurim, and people know Shemar Sefer by heart, and the level of literacy is 99% or whatever. So, Meila, that's not much of a shikul. So, what remains, some people think that Chazot HaShatz is the basic Shemar Esrei. That's basic philosophy of Tzibur. And the basic Shemar Esrei is different from Chazot HaShatz. Others think the basic Shemar Esrei is Biyachi. So, the Shatz is a favor to those who have trouble down it. So it's apparently the Chosam Gemuna and Chachamim in the last half of Rosh Hashanah. Now, there are those who claim, like the Rav comes to the Rambam, and that both are true. That you need Tfil B'Yachid counts because Tfil B'Yachid counts. Tfil HaShatz is part of the Tfil of Itzim. Now, the question is how certain now, when you say Tfil HaShatz has value, intrinsic value because it's Tfil HaTzibur. The question now is, does the tzibur also now, does the tzibur have to behave as if it's one of Esrei? Or does the tzibur represent you, like the Israeli ambassador to Washington? He represents me, even though when he goes to visit the he goes to visit the Department of State or whatever, I don't have to go also. I don't have to behave as if, even though he's my delegate, I don't have to behave the same way he is. So if he has to dress up for fancy dinner, I don't. I can stay home and watch TV. So the question is, when Shliach Tzibur is your delegate, do you have to pay attention and be, to put it in halakhic terms, do you need a ma'aseh tefillah? Even though he does the nusach tefillah, do you need a ma'aseh tefillah? Or no, he does everything. He does the nusach tefillah and the ma'aseh tefillah. So if you don't need a ma'isa tefillah, so he's motzi, he represents everyone. So the kohen gadol in beis hamikdash, right? The kohen is avoda, and I'm not in the beis hamikdash. Or do you say the tefillah, everyone has to be at attention as part of the ma'isa tefillah, even though only shliach tzibur is reciting the text? That's the dilemma. At the end of the day, Shulchan Aruch says that at least 10 people should pay attention. So there's always the question, are you one of the 10 or not? And it's certainly not a good idea to study if there are only 10 people in shul, or only 10 people who you think are paying attention. That's not recommended. But it's like this. At the end of the day, most of us do not treat Shulchan Aruch the exact same kind of Shulchan Aruch as a Shulchan Aruch. Should you learn we learn during your regular Shema? Of course not. So Chazoshas, I think those who learn, at the end of the day, they treat it as second rate. And someone told me that Rav Moshe Feinstein is true, I think, what she says. He recommends not studying in Chazoshas. But the person told me he read it true, but during Chazoshas. at any rate, if you want to learn Chazoshas, Yesh Emily Small. If you want to pay attention, I do think, though, you should pay attention to be more or less in the ballpark in terms of what the chazan is doing. In other words, don't get involved in a sugya that you sort of vav, that you have no idea whether he's in Baruch Aleinu or in Modi. You should be, if you can somehow multitask up to a reasonable amount, v'vakasha. But, don't lose yourself totally. One final point. All this is true except for Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, the chazan shatz, is part, you need it because of the tkiyos. Because in the shul doesn't blow belachash, so you need the shas to be laid to you because you need kiyos to have brachos. Rosh Hashanah, more than any other day of the year, kiyos shas is crucial. I remember, matter of fact, I was by the Rav once, and he taught these halachas, and he taught the Rambam. The Rambam said you stand under the shas. So one of the Balbatim here, who took him in very physical shape, he said, "The Rebbe, of course not Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur." And the Rebbe looked at him with a straight face and said, "Rosh Hashanah is most important." And he almost passed out because. The Rosh Hashanah is more important the rest of the year. I would say Yom Kippur less than Rosh Hashanah, but Rashi and Yoma at least thinks in Yom Kippur. The Siddur Avoda and Musaf is part of Rosh Hashanah. We don't think so because we intuitively don't think so. Because Siddur Avoda is not part of the Shemoneh Esrei. The Shatz repeats on the Shemoneh Esrei. Rashi thinks that the Pita and Siddur Avoda are integrated into the Shatz because you need to say Siddur Avoda, so we have to say Musaf. So Kuti Rashi and Kippur and Musaf at least is also an added benefit. It's not about the text itself, not the Piyuti. And the final point, I certainly think, forget about the Tkiyos Tzedek Brachos. The whole year round, Chazan Shatz really just repeats what you're doing anyways. Rosh Yom Kippur, because of the way they're designed, A, because of all the piyuti, B, what I said before, because of the intensity. In Rosh Yom Kippur, you should certainly pay attention to Chazan Shatz and not with Rosh Yom Kippur. The enough opportunities to learn the rest of the year anyways. Okay, one more.
Where is the Rav say you draw the line is drawn between the Chazan Shatz reflecting the intensity of the day as opposed to being a tier from the tibur in terms of the length of the
Chazan Shatz? Is that the Shatz or? You're asking the wrong person. I would not pose a premium Ptiach of the Sibur and Shem Kippur. I mean, what's your Kippur for? Kippur's for Davening. In other words, the intensity requires an effort. Will you be exhausted at the end of the day? Maybe yes. But believe me, if you had a court case, I said, go back to the example I gave before. If Chazal Shalom, you have a relative, a surgery or undergoing medical procedure, it's intense. I think my daughter had heart surgery, Bismano. I said the day of the day she had, I said the whole tilling from A to Z. I feel it was a tear. I felt it was a need. I think Kippur, it's Tichat Tzibur is not a maid. Whatever accurate thoughts, I don't think you have to artificially prolong it just to sing like little children like to try to finish, the Seder at 3 a.m. regardless of whether, it's justified or not. Just, to be able to say school the next day that they finish the latest but if you let's say, but if it's not artificially prolonged, if you really flex intensity, so make the effort. You know, this is what Kippur is all about. It's a day once a year to be intense. I'll give you a better metaphor than the medical one. Couples, when they're about to get engaged, right after they get engaged, the day they get engaged, so they go on a date, they come at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they, they'll tire, so they'll be tired later, but you know, there's a dynamic of the relationship, and I would obviously make the effort. I think something else, if you're aware in advance that you're going to, you know, part of it is psychological. People, if someone thinks the shiur will be over at 1 o'clock and she's over at 1:05, so the last 5 minutes they're a total blank. But if you think the shiur will be over at 1:20, it's over 1:05, so he's paying perfect attention. You know, there's a lot of psychology involved in this. But that's the thing, though, you know, Yom Kippur is a very intense day. Chacham may not be a show to rest in advance, to rest afterwards, but I'm not a big nose. I know that other people, you may get different answers from other people, including the Beit Midrash here as well, but we'll survive.
In reference to the Rambam on superstition, how do we reconcile all the superstitions that are seemingly found in the Gemara as Rambam?
The Rambam was opposed to most of them. He either offered alternative explanations, or he claimed there's machlokes in Chazal itself, and he chose to follow the opinion which is against it. If you want to see, you know, his most explicit formulation is in Dina Perkid Alpha of the Zohar. Just anyone who thinks that all superstitions are asur because, anyone who thinks that all superstitions are effective but asur, so Zodat Nashim Ameritzot. But anyone with any brains, the Rambam thinks, so realizes now it's usher, not because even though it's effective, it's usher, man, it's totally ineffective, and he either explained away the sources by reinterpreting some of them. For the first time in the morning, so he doesn't think it's because of shading. The first time in the morning is because you have to be prepare yourself for tefillah properly, in terms of respect and dignity and decorum and the like. Others, he says, machlokas and tzachlokas, I disagree. You're right. There's no doubt in Chazal. The overwhelming, you know, tendency is to recognize it. And the Rambam, he rejected it. The Meiri in one place. The Meiri, those who follow Sfutzim also did. I know some people who won't win Meiri because the Meiri says that the nurses are shaping. It's not psychological. The Rambam would agree with that. Just the can't boycott the Rambam. So and the Meiri bears the brunt of that. But I tell you, it's very deeply rooted human need. So, let's say it differently. The world can be perceived from a logical, rational perspective. It can be perceived from other perspectives. And because this duality really exists, we have this dual perspective always. You know, it's a galgal chozer ba'olam. Whether it's mysticism versus rationalism, it's not a question of right or wrong. It's a question of it's a dual perspective. And every generation, or every X amount of time, you know, the one is up, the other is down. And both of them are so basic human nature that both exist and will continue to exist. And like, if you read books from 50, 60 years ago, they write, you know, that mysticism, superstitions are about to disappear. And someone wrote a book about Father Gaonim. He writes there that in the time of the Gaonim, people used to go and spell Kibbet Tzaddikim. Even nowadays, you go to some place in Iran, you can see people praying Kibbutz Tzaddikim. So, look around, look what's going on nowadays. Things change. Last question.
How are we supposed to have Kavanah and intensity on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, bearing in mind Yemadim was the first day?
Okay. How are we supposed to have Kavanah and Rosh Hashanah second day when we know the first day doesn't really count? I'll tell you, I think here is as follows. In Chassidut, there's all kinds of explanations. In a sense like this, the Rebbe once said to me, maybe apologetically, maybe not, we went to the following. The Amidu Lifnei Hashem Yom Tov Sheini is the exact, this was in Sukkot, not on Rosh Hashanah, but the Amidu Lifnei Hashem Yom Tov Sheini is equivalent to that of Yom Tov Rishon. The severity, the halachic severity is different. Now I'll try to... I'll just comment. Hey, I feel. I think it's Machatz Rishon. And the Chavei was split. I won't. If you want to come on, and then just have a back explain from there. I think what he meant was the following. What's Kedusha? What's the Yom HaDin? What is the Yom Tov in general? The Yom Tov in general is basically one's controlling idea, which is Lifnei Hashem. When man makes an appointment with Kadosh Baruch Hu, when you appear in front of him, when you have this, if you want, this meeting, and you Lifnei Hashem, you present yourself, that gets Kedusha, and that's the defining idea of Yom Tov. Like Lifnei Hashem Titaru, it's where all Yom Tov is. So it's some Yom Tov, we go to Beis HaMikdash, it's like Kadosh Baruch Hu comes, so to speak, to us. But the Maaseh, Lifnei Hashem is the controlling idea always of Kedusha. Now, what happens in Yom Tov Sheni? What happens the following? On Yom Tov Rishon, Kadosh Baruch Hu set the appointment. He called, so to speak, and told us to come to an appointment, to come to a meeting, to come to a rendezvous. Yom Tov Sheni, we did it. And Yom Tov Sheni, this is a Minhag Rabbana. So the factor who set up the appointment was us, and not the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But once we've made the appointment, and he shows up, but he's willing to show up to an appointment that we made also, not only that he made. So once he shows up to the appointment, so now we have Lifnei Hashem, same degree. Words, once man and God meet, it becomes Lifnei Hashem. The difference is that in the Yom Tov Rishon, Kadosh Baruch Hu sets it up, and to Sheni, we set it up. But once it's set up, so the meeting, the interaction, remains the same. Now it's true about Kedusha, I think it's possible about Yom HaDin, because you can repeat it. In other words, look, I think Hasidut talks about Dina Rafia, Dina Kasha, Dina Rafia. I think, in other words, it's more severe, less severe. But the basic idea is that you can have the same thing, you can do the same thing twice. If you want, first Rosh Hashanah, and then the Hasidus has all kinds of ideas, like first Rosh Hashanah is for the whole, it's universal, second Rosh Hashanah is only for Yisrael, one's for the Tzibur, one's for the Yachid. You have all kinds of Malachim, and which tribal, like, if you want to compartmentalize it between different groups. But the basic point is that you can repeat the same deen, and there's a second chance, and you can go, you can repeat the whole thing again, and you can have a different outcome or a better outcome. Or if you want to begin with, the deen itself is, once there have been two appointments, the deen itself is divided into two stages. But I think the real point is that the halachic way is, not like weight is different, but the fact that we're with Hashem remains the same. That's the way he said it. So, to that, I'm going to go to the next one.